Welcome back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. This is the first episode of the Daft on Draft podcast since the end of the NFL draft. So pretty self-explanatory what we're going to do in this episode here as we are going to review it. Fun story, though. Apparently, the entire country of Portugal lost power. So Dalton will not be joining us because he had to message me through Discord using a hotspot on his second phone to be able to reach me that all of Portugal is out of power. So I reached out to my good buddy, JP Acosta at SB Nation, and JP is tapping in tonight. JP, pleasure having you back on the show. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Luckily, the power in Claremont, Florida is still all, we're still here. We still got everything. I hope Dalton gets the power back, but it's good to be back on.
I love it. So again, like I said, we're going to be going through and recapping a few different talking points, best scheme fit, best day two, three picks, the worst of the worst, best worst team mocks or team drafts as well here. Before I do that, I do want to give a shout out to, anybody who turned out over the weekend when we had our live shows going on. Had a pretty good turnout is there as well. I did just drop a new article on my summer scouting quarterback, one Indiana quarterback, Fernando Mendoza, today as well. So tune into that as well. I did paywall all of the film clips, though. So if you would like to see all the film clips that I included in that article, you got to do what you got to do. Other than that, I streamed a little NCAA last night and answered some Q&A. So that was a lot of fun, too. All that to say, content at Daft on Draft is rolling heavy, rolling strong, getting into the new draft season already as well. So make sure you tune into that. JP, you dropped a top 32-ish kind of big board for the 2026 class as well. Any names on that particularly stand out that there's like, yeah, this is a guy?
So my two guys for this draft class, one is Keldrick Falk from Auburn. Mm-hmm. Every time that I watch somebody play against Auburn's defense, I kept watching 15 for Auburn. He's going to be the how we discussed Mykel Williams playing in the tight front and still showing, like, Shamar Stewart discussion that we had about, oh, the tight front is this, that, the other, but you can still see the athletic tools. We're going to do that same thing for Keldrick Falk next year. Just an incredibly long, tall, powerful edge. He had 8 sacks last season in the tight front, so mm-hmm. It makes me think, like, you can move him all across the front. That's one of my guys for this class. And the next one is Notre Dame wide receiver Jaden Greathouse. That is, so, funny story, I have scouted this kid since he was in high school. That was one of the he was a Northwestern target when I was working at SI Northwestern. I was tasked with scouting him, and to see him kind of become this receiver that I thought he could be has been really cool. I think he's really similar to the Ohio State guys that come out of the draft where they're like super good in the slot, extremely shifty, great route running. I think everybody remembers him putting the Penn State corner on his butt in the college football playoff, but he's extremely tough. He's going to block his butt off. I'm a super big fan of his.
I love it. Yeah, he that second half in the Ohio State game, the national championship too, he was all over the field there too, cooking dudes up. But let's get into a little 2025 draft talk here. Let's put a bow on it and let's get moving on into the 2026 season here. So JP, to start, I just kind of want to go through overall team drafts and what you thought of some of the better team drafts out there and who you thought they were. So why don't you shoot out three and then I'll kind of spitball off of that and shoot out anything that I enjoyed as well that you haven't mentioned already.
So my favorite draft of the entire class was the Carolina Panthers. I thought that they did such a good job of finding their identity and knowing what they want to be and continuing to go all in on that. Ever since like their last offseason with Dan Morgan as their GM, they have gone all in defensively to try and stop the run and add a bunch of bodies to stop the run. And I think you add Cam Jackson day three, Nick Scorton on day two was one of my favorite picks of day two, just to kind of, if you can get him back at 265, he was at 257 at the combine, but if you can get him around that weight range, he can be the guy that he was at Purdue. And then adding Amon Mielen on top of that to kind of be the, I called him Arden Key. So if he can be like the Arden Key, like designated pass rusher for the Panthers, and you rotate him in with Jadeveon Clowney, you rotate him in with Patrick Jones, DJ Wonnum, you have a really solid edge group right there. And then adding Teterell McMillan to that offense, I think, kind of adds layers. And I think that's something that they were missing last season, and they needed somebody who can create easy separation for Bryce Young in a short to intermediate game. Adding Mitchell Evans, I thought, was really cool. So they had my favorite draft from top to bottom. I thought the Kansas City Chiefs did a really, really good job of just, like, I thought they'd have to trade up for Josh Simmons. They ended up trading back and still getting Josh Simmons. Omar Norman Lott, Noel Williams, and Ayaan Gelati are all Spags type of players, especially like a lot what they look for in the body types along the front. And adding Jalen Royals and Breshard Smith on day three just to give them some more juice. And I think Breshard Smith can have a really big use in this offense, because if you remember, like, the super hyper efficient, like, Chiefs offenses had, like, the Jerick McKinnon, where he just, like, he like caught like 9 touchdowns in 2022. That's what Breshard Smith can do. So I'm a really big fan of what they did. And then my last one, I actually think that the San Francisco 49ers had a really good, like, okay, we saw what we were doing wrong in 2024. Let's just make sure that never happens again.
Yeah.
And they added CJ West, Alfred Collins, and Mykel Williams. They are going to try and stop the run all 2025. And I think that I honestly just want to see a defensive line of Nick Bosa, Alfred Collins, CJ West, and Mykel Williams just on the field at the same time to give Fred Warner more range just to not get touched. It's going to be super cool. I love Upton Stout. I think he is such a Niners corner with that disposition that he plays with. And I just think that they did a lot of stuff. I think it's Connor Colby in day three that I think he could potentially try and start for them this season. So those are three of my favorites.
Yeah, San Francisco was one that I was really going to point out. Like, you, the first two rounds, go out and get Mykel Williams and Alfred Collins. Brother, nobody is running the football on that football team in 2025. And then, yeah, to double tap on CJ West. In the fourth round, I thought he was going to go top 100. I really did, after he had a fantastic Shrine Bowl, went out and tested his ass off. I was like, man, this guy's going to go top 100. He's productive for 5 years. So I think those are some really good shouts. I do want to shout out the Giants. I love their draft outside of one move. Outside of one move, which I'm just not going to say that. You know, I think they probably donated 2 day 3 picks for a guy they could have got at 34 anyway. But outside of that, man, the Giants attacked this, man. I mean, Abdul Carter, Darius Alexander, Cam Scadaboo, Marcus Bowe in the fifth round. Like, that, that's probably the best value pick in the entire draft, in my opinion, right there, to get Marcus Bowe in the fifth round. You could play him at center. You can play him at right guard. You can play him at left guard. You can play him at right tackle. I think he can just play wherever you want him to play. And he's physical, and he's athletic. And I don't think it's going to take him long to get up to, like, starting speed. So I think that's just a tremendous play. And then to get, like, Thomas Fedoni in the seventh round is like, okay, that's a pretty solid draft for the New York Giants. Los Angeles Chargers is another one that I want to shout out.
A very brand draft.
But man, do I love it. Omarion Hampton. You know, I'm going to double tap on some of these names when we get to a later question as well. But, like, Omarion Hampton, I think Trey Harris is the perfect wide receiver to balance out that entire room. Well, Trey Harris, one, Keandre Lambert-Smith and Aronde Getz. And Keandre Lambert-Smith is, like, okay, because I don't think he's incredibly strong through contact. But they don't really have that guy, I guess, outside of Quentin Johnston a little bit, who, like, really wins on the vertical plane. So even drafting a guy who just does one thing in the fifth round and just does that one thing, like winning on the vertical plane, I think is good to round out that room. And then Aronde Getz, and man, in the fifth round as well, like, this team would have drafted Colson Loveland if he was on the board. They got bargain bin Colson Loveland in the fifth round, who's probably going to come in and be their starting F tight end. Like,
yeah,
day one. That's their F.
I think that the Chargers had such a good draft with trying to build on what they did last season. I think the Chargers wanted to be explosive through the run game and then kind of just let Justin Herbert, like, dice you up underneath in the passing game. So you have Ladd McConkey, and I think Trey Harris plays off of McConkey really well. And then, like you said, Keandre Lambert-Smith is a specialist in the fifth round. That's perfectly fine, especially if you can get him winning downfield, like you said, Aronde Getz winning downfield. It just feels like they're gearing up to be more explosive. I love the Jamari Caldwell pick on day two. That is the one-to-one Puna Ford replacement, and I think that's just going to, like, help elevate the defense so much more, especially if he can get that pass rush down. But I was a really big fan of what they did.
Yeah. The last team I want to shout out to, and this is from a rookie GM here too. So this is like the Las Vegas Raiders, man. Like, I thought John Spytek had himself a draft. Ashton Jeanty in round one, Jack Besh in round two, three picks in round three of Darian Porter, Caleb Rogers, Charles Grant. Like, I think the Darian Porter pick is probably my least favorite pick, just because, like, I think he's just kind of an athlete. Like, he was a 6th-year rotational player, but an elite gunner as well. But, like, if they just need him to be a boundary corner, then, like, okay. But that double tap on the offensive lineman at 98-99 on Caleb Rogers and Charles Grant rules. Like, that rules,
man. It's so cool.
Yes, especially with, like, the Colton Miller stuff. Like, this could be his last year. They might trade him if they can't work out a contract situation. I mean, it would be ideal if Colton Miller was there for 1 year, because, like, Charles Grant spent 5 years in FCS weight room, spent five yep. years in FCS program. Like, he's very small, and he, like, struggles to put on weight. Get that guy in an NFL weight room in an NFL program for 1 year, and I think you'll see a huge difference because of the nutrition, because of everything he has at his disposal at the NFL level that he didn't have at William and Mary. The two wide receivers as well, man. We just talked about it with the Chargers, but, like, they are drafting puzzle pieces to put an entire puzzle together in the wide receiver room. Jack Besh, that ideal big slot, even Z. But I think largely they have the bodies to run 12 personnel, but you can run a little pseudo 13 while still being in 12 personnel by short motioning Jack Besh into, like, an H-ish look, and he'll crack you, man, as well. So I love that kind of fit there. And then to double tap with Dante Thornton too, who might be, if we're just, like, siphoning roles, might be the best vertical threat wide receiver in the draft. So to go out and like, we look at the wide receiver room in Las Vegas is like, where's the firepower? Where's the explosiveness? And even after drafting Jack Besh, that doesn't really answer the question there, because he probably runs a 4.58. So, like, to go and get Dante Thornton then is like, yeah, okay, there it is. There it is. Even if you just have him run nines and posts, like, have at it, man. Take the top off. So,
like, do all the stuff you did at Tennessee. Just run the XY axis.
Yep. That's it. And then the Tommy Mellett pick, man.
So, like, freaking cool.
I love it. Yes.
So good.
A quarterback who ran a 4.39 and it's like, yeah, I'll go play slot receiver in the NFL. That sounds good to me. That's amazing.
It's incredibly on brand for Pete Carroll. And again, you can tell when I look at drafts, I try and, like, see what they're trying to build, like the idea. And the idea is, we're going to be really hard to tackle. So you go out and get Ashton Jeanty, who was the hardest person to tackle in his draft class. Jack Besh, who was extremely physical, tough after the catch. Tommy Mellott, who is the most untackleable person at the FCS level. You go out and add Dante Thornton, who's just going to run past everybody. And you add Brock Bowers into all of this. I can see where they're going. I think my favorite pick of theirs, like you said, was Charles Grant, because I was super high on Charles Grant. I think people who know me understand that I think that Charles Grant in, like, 3 years is going to be an incredible left tackle. So I think getting him and Caleb Rogers, like you said, double tapping there on day two, just incredibly smart work. And like you said, for a first year GM, it feels like they have set themselves up well to kind of set the foundation for what this era of their team is going to be.
Yeah. And I love that we just didn't even question taking running back 6th overall. We're not even entertaining the positional value conversation. They took one of the three blue chip players in this draft class. So
yeah,
I'm going to give that one to him. Yeah.
You can take your positional value and I'll just go, have you seen him play?
Yeah.
Like, turn on the tape.
Eat it. So now let's talk about some of our favorite, like, day two, day three picks. I'm going to start here with a little bit of a homer pick, but, like, Carson Sweshinger freaking rules, man.
Oh my God. He's incredible.
He rules. 6'2", 242, jumps 39 inches and is, like, some of the best agilities of a linebacker all time. Like, this guy, and his tape's awesome. Like, he's a tackling machine. He gets downhill in a force. He can backpedal. He's got really good instincts in coverage. Like, I know that there was a team picking in the top 20 that like had him third on their board. And their first target was off the board. They took their second target. If their second target was off the board, Carson Sweshinger was going to go in top 20. Like, I know that for a fact. And so I absolutely love that pick at 33. The Browns still kind of think that JOK is coming back. So, like, a second level of JOK and Carson Sweshinger is, like, ultimate demon second level. and I absolutely love that. Who was one of your favorite day two picks here?
So I touched on it earlier, but Alfred Collins to the 49ers just absolutely freaking rules. Outside of Talik Williams, he is the best run defending defensive tackle in this class. He's impossible to move. Not only that, but he's going to make plays in the backfield. And if we think about what the 49ers defense was under Robert Saleh and D'Amico Ryans, their best years were with having DJ Jones eat blocks in the middle of the defense, allowing Fred Warner to kind of run and roam. And I think Alfred Collins, just again, like we said earlier, is just another hammering, like, we're not going to get like 200 yards run on us ever again. We're going to try and nip this in the bud immediately.
Yeah, I love that. Kyle Williams to the Patriots is another one I would shout out, just because, like, I just felt like, obviously, they tried to take some big swings at wide receiver and they whiffed a bunch. Like, they wrote Chris Godwin a blank check and he turned him down and went back to Tampa. They were in the Cooper Kupp trade market. They were in the T. Higgins trade market. Obviously, T. never hit the market there at all. So, like, or free agency market with T, I should say, or tag and trade. So, I guess kind of trade market. But so they kind of just swung and missed. And the one they got, did get was a 32-year-old receiver coming off a torn ACL and Stephon Diggs, who they're committing 1 year to. But heading into the draft, it felt like their wide receiver room was just a bunch of, like, Zs who weren't overly explosive. Like, you have Stephon Diggs coming off an ACL. You have Jalen Polk, who is coming off an abysmal rookie season. And Javon Baker, who, like, hardly saw the field last year, and Kayshon Boutte. So it's like, you just have a bunch of Zs who can't run. And so I like going out and getting a guy who is, like, probably one of the more natural fluid separators in the draft. And to get him in the third round is pretty awesome there as well. So I think that adds an element for Drake May. So Kyle Williams to the Patriots is another one. Jacob Parrish to the Bucks. That pick.
Oh my God. Too. It's
double
so
tapping awesome. On corner, getting your nickel. In my opinion, the best nickel in the draft. Like, that dude will stick his nose in any freaking gap that you tell him to sling into. So I think that pick is going to fit Todd Bowles pretty well too.
Yeah, I think with the Parrish pick, if you in your head are just kind of gaming out, if Benjamin Morrison is healthy, Benjamin Morrison, Zion McCollum, Jacob Parrish, Tyke Smith, Antoine Winfield Jr., you're pretty set in the secondary. I think that secondary is fun as hell, man. They're going to come up and hit you in the face. I'm hoping Morrison's healthy. But like you said, Jacob Parrish, best nickel in the draft. And again, the thing that stands out is he, to play nickel, you have to have a little bit of psycho in you. Yeah. And he is grade A psycho. Like, he's unafraid to come up and, like, stick Cam Scadaboo. And I was like, okay, we're done here. Like, that's all I needed to see.
A couple more that we've already mentioned that I just had bolded out, and I'll just throw back out here. Nick Scorton to the Panthers, Darius Alexander to the Giants, I think are two pretty solid ones too. And then Caleb Johnson to the Steelers is actually, I'm going to hold on that one, cause we're going to talk. I'm going to hold on that one. Let's go to day three. Oh yeah. Go ahead. No. Sorry. Go ahead.
One of my favorites, again, was, like, again, another brand of mine, Femi Oladeja to the Titans.
Okay.
I'm a super big fan of his. I think that he has that athleticism to become something really good. But if you look at where the Titans are in terms of losing Harold Landry, they needed juice off the edge. And Oladeja was still learning how to play edge. I mean, he moved from middle linebacker to edge 2 games into 2024 because UCLA found out Kay Medrano was actually really good. So you want to get all the guys on the field. But he's such a good run defender. You can't run plays away from him. He'll run himself out of a play because he's new to this. But again, that athleticism, the tools, the length, I think it's a sure bet for a Titans team that, you know, they've made stuff out of these athletes. And I think if they just put together a really athletic defensive front with guys who can just get after the passer, I think it's a good formula.
Yeah, I love it. I love it as well. And again, he is a little bit of raw, but like a little raw, but like you're getting him into an NFL room. And like, I don't think the Titans think they're going to go out this year and like blow the doors off of everybody. So get your young guys snaps. You've got a lot of them, and like, let them play and let them develop. So I love that as well. Moving on to day three. I mentioned Marcus Bow already. One of my favorite picks here. And it's been a sleeper player of mine the entire process. And I don't understand how like we didn't get more buzz around this player. His honestly, the teammate playing right tackle opposite him got all the buzz and he went undrafted. And that's Kansas offensive lineman Bryce Cabledue. Again, played left tackle at Kansas, where this guy's clearly a guard. Like you could see on tape, like this guy is stubby playing left tackle, but like his foot speed is awesome. He's an ultra competitor. He's playing with a quarterback who has no regard for his own protection. Like so it's hard to even protect for the guy because you turn around and he's on your left shoulder, he's on your outside shoulder. So like, but I thought Bryce Cabledue did a tremendous job. So like I'm projecting this guy to guard, and I'm like, this guy's a starting guard. This guy's gonna start at guard at some point in his career, like early on. And he falls, like, doesn't get a combine invite, blows up the Shrine Bowl. Like, one of the best players at the Shrine, in my opinion. I was there, and, like, one of the best players at the Shrine doesn't get a combine invite. Tests like a freak at his pro day, and then gets drafted sixth round by the Seahawks. And so that's like one of my favorite day three picks. Who are some guys that stand out for you in that range?
Well, I'm going to stick with the Seahawks here. And I'm going to go Torrey Horton from Colorado State. It's just, I thought he actually was going to go a little earlier. I know the knee injury was still scaring teams off, but he ran a 4.4 at a combine after tearing his ACL. But when you watch Torrey Horton, you just look at a solid receiver. He does all the little things well, which I know is kind of a cliche when we talk about receiver, but he truly does have like a jack of all trades type of receiver. I think he best projects as just your Z. And you think of guys who have come out of Colorado State and passed. Michael Gallup is a guy that comes to mind with Torrey Horton. And I think he fits really well in their offense in Seattle because he can just do some of the little things and be the outside guy that's sort of the more reliable person on the outside rather than Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who is, you know, a roll of dice every single time he gets a target. So you have a true reliable outside guy who can take some blows off people in the run game and also be just this consistent in-between threat to take snaps or make sure you can't move all your coverage to JSN.
Yeah. I love that choice for Torrey Horton as well. I'm going to shout out a Colts duo on day three as well. I mean, Chris Ballard, one of them is just like your stereotypical Chris Ballard, like just lining up high-end athletes and throwing darts at them on day three. But that's Iowa State offensive tackle Jalen Travis on day three there for the Colts as well. But then DJ Giddens too. And yep. And the reason I really like the DJ Giddens pick is because, like, I think sometimes like some teams want to, again, puzzle piece their running back room. Like, this guy's my thunder, this guy's my lightning, this guy can catch passes out of the backfield. But with the Colts, they've done it a little differently, and I think they kind of have to, because like Jonathan Taylor kind of has to be on a pitch count. Like he kind of has some ongoing injuries that build up over the year and they have over his career. So like for the Colts necessarily, they're not as much looking for a compliment, but maybe like a relief pitcher. And so I think DJ Giddens is a great relief pitcher for Jonathan Taylor in that Indianapolis backfield as well. So, I mean, I've been a huge DJ Giddens stand and like, so any team that picked him, I was going to pick him for a best fit best pick on day three anyway, but specifically for the Colts to be that relief pitcher for Jonathan Taylor, I think is a really awesome fit there too.
Yeah, he fits so well. I think Jalen Travis is another one of my guys that I was kind of surprised that he fell to day three because of the elite athleticism. I thought team would just bank on the traits late in day two. But going to the Colts, where they just seem to always get guys who are really traitsy, really toolsy up front, and just go, we'll see if it works. And I think they've had a pretty good hit rate on that. So I think Jalen Travis could end up being a starter down the line. One guy that I did want to shout out is Poopall going to the Rams. I freaking love the guy. I know he's a little undersized. I know he's not the greatest athlete, but he's just always around the ball. His instincts always lead him to the right place. I think he has some underrated like coverage chops. I'm pretty confident he's going to start for the Rams at linebacker. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not saying much, but he's going to start at Mike for the Rams real quickly because of the instincts. He gets to the ball, and I think it behind that defensive line that'll take some hits off of him, it'll actually end up looking a lot like what he did at Ole Miss.
Yeah. He was at Shrine as well. One of the most instinctive players at Shrine there too. And again, people just don't like him because he's tiny. And I mean, that's fair. He is, but yeah, I mean, the Rams did this with Ernest Jones, who's a different type of linebacker, but draft him on day three and start him as a rookie. And he's an instant impact player. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this one because like none of these guys have played a single NFL snap. And so like, I don't want to write the ending before it even begins, but just like, just briefly touching on just a few things here. Like, what did we think were some of either the worst team drafts in general or like worst pick values in general from your opinion this weekend?
I hate to keep ragging on them because they continue to just, it's, I don't understand what you're doing picking Dylan Gabriel in round three. Yeah. I keep trying to talk myself into it from different angles. It's like, well, maybe they just want Shedeur to feel adversity. Maybe they're just throwing guys at the wall and seeing if it sticks. But then if Dylan Gabriel doesn't make the team, you wasted a third round
top 100 pick.
Yeah, you wasted the top 100 pick on an old lefty quarterback with injury issues who didn't even make the final 53. So I just continue to wonder what the process was there for them. That's one of the picks I didn't really understand. Tyler Shuck at 40 is another one where I'm just like, look, if you're going to punt on this class, punt later. You don't punt by taking a guy at 40, you know? And I think Tyler Shuck had some pretty cool throws. But again, he's 26 years old, litany of injuries, and he gets so scared under pressure that the scar tissue has already built up for him after taking so many hits in his career. So you just wonder what's going to change behind an offensive line that isn't exactly inspiring confidence at the moment. Those are two picks where I'm kind of just like, I don't really understand them. Of course, they're at a quarterback position, but one of them, the last one, I think is Anthony Belton to the Packers. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it because Anthony Belton is massive, but he's a guard, and specifically a gap scheme guard. The Packers aren't a gap team. They're not, unless they're completely shifting their philosophy, which you don't really do for a second round pick, but it just doesn't make sense with where they are, how they spent money in the offseason. It just, that pick kind of felt weird to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That the Savion Williams too. And even Braden.
Yeah.
Like, I think they overdrafted a little bit in the middle rounds there for sure. And the Belton one specifically, like I watched that. I was like, oh, this guy could go top 100. I'd be cool with like spending a top 125 pick on him. And they took him at 54. So it's like, okay, you guys jumped the shark there a little bit. And another player in that same kind of conversation with the Rams is, I think, Terrence Ferguson, man. And I understand that he tested off the charts, and I understand that the tight end position is like perhaps the most important position to have those, like, to be a high end athlete out of any position in the NFL. But like, I didn't see the movement skills on tape. I didn't see the explosiveness on tape. On tape, it's like this is a 4.5 guy, like, or not 4.5, like a 4.7 guy. Like, so like I didn't see it on tape, and I'm just like, top 50. That's a little steep for Terrence Ferguson, but Sean McVay is a magic worker out of anything. So he could spin that to dust and make me look really stupid. Last thing let's talk about here, JP, is I like every year, in all three rounds, there are rookies who just like produce year one because they get drafted into the perfect scheme. And it's like, yep, you know, that guy got drafted in round three, but he's going to go for 800 receiving yards this year because he's, you know, so like, who are some of those guys for you specifically that you think are like, oh, yep, that's a day one rookie contributor who's just going to put it on in his rookie season?
Yeah, I think the first one is Malachi Starks going to the Ravens. I think that was a pick that everybody circled as like, this is the pick for both these football player and the team. And when it happened, I'm like, all right, there's a candidate for defensive rookie of the year, because all he's going to do is just produce. And I think what he does is he allows Zach Orr to kind of be versatile with moving his guys around. You can play Starks at nickel and keep Kyle Hamilton back at deep safety. You could play Kyle Hamilton at his natural, more overhang spot and let Starks kind of be more of the deep safety. But I think he's just going to come in. He's incredibly football smart. You can tell watching him play. I'm not going to say like overthink, but it felt kind of like he got nitpicked for a lot of reasons that didn't feel like, oh, he ran a 4.5. Let's knock him down the board. But again, 4.5 is actually like fast. It's fast for a safety, and he plays faster. The GPS times had him playing faster. So I think that's a pick where I'm really excited to see him contribute day one. Jalen Noel, I think, is actually going to produce quicker than Jaden Higgins.
I was gonna say I like it better than the other teammate they picked around earlier.
I thought 39 was gonna be where they picked Noel, and I thought Higgins was gonna go later, but Noel is just gonna provide so much more explosiveness to that offense, especially without having Tank Dell for what feels like a really long time. I'm not sure what the timetable is on the injury, but it happening so close to the end of the season and the severity of the injury, I don't know if we'll see Tank Dell. And even if we do, that's another catastrophic leg injury. We don't know if he's going to bring that same level of juice. But Jalen Noel has that ability, that second and third gear downfield, and then the concentration downfield. I think Higgins and Nico Collins are kind of redundant and where they win and how they win. So adding Noel, I think he's going to be an instant impact. Just we can put this guy in the slot and he's going to immediately bring us explosive plays. So those are two guys that I really think are going to be like the day one contributors.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's hard to get to this point of the podcast where we've mentioned so many names and not have a little bit of overlap, but the two outside of Ashton Jeanty, like, yeah, the running back who at sixth overall, obviously he's going to get 300 carries, like 250 carries as a rookie. But Omarion Hampton and Caleb Johnson, I think, are two running backs who are in a prime position to rushed for over 1,000 yards as rookies.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like Jalen Warren in that Pittsburgh room as well, but like Caleb Johnson is going to start. He's going to get the bulk of the carries, and Jalen Warren's still going to be the relief pitcher that he was for Najee Harris. Like, that's not going to change because of this draft pick. So I think Caleb Johnson, I mentioned Carson Swessinger, but that I think Carson Swessinger, and I truly don't think this is a homer tippy. I mean, it is a little bit because it's hard to completely separate emotion from logic when you talk about the team that isn't within your culture that you grew up in, right? But like, I think Carson Swessinger is a perennial Pro Bowler. Like I just do. And to pair him with Jim Schwartz behind what he, like Jim Schwartz wants his front four to just gap shoot and penetrate. And he wants his second level to react and correct, like based off of what happens. So like, I think he's ideal for that. That's why JOK is so good. He's so athletic. He can correct in a heartbeat. So I think Carson Swessinger was one. I mentioned a little earlier as well, Aronde Gadsden. Again, he's going to step in and be the starting F tight end for the Raiders or for the Chargers. He's just going to play a ton of slot snaps for them as well. And then the last one is a seventh round pick.
Okay.
Like the moment Kanata Mumfield got drafted by the Rams.
Oh yeah.
I was like, that guy's going to go for 800 yards as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go for 800 yards as a rookie.
Such a precise route runner. Like he's going to carve people up in ways that Tutu Atwell couldn't, in terms of just bringing them again. I think the Rams offense was slow last year. And I kind of think that's kind of why Terrence Ferguson was the pick there at 46 at tight end. They just want speed. And I think Mumfield there is going to bring them a whole lot of speed, but also just separation downfield.
Yeah. Yeah. So the moment he was drafted was like, well, okay, 800 yards, chalk it up. Because I mean, like they were playing with like DeMarcus Robinson as like their wide receiver 3 last year. It's like, come on. So yeah, I think that's a good conversation of some day one scheme fits. Pretty comprehensive review. Do you have anything else that you would like to add that we didn't hit on that is on the top of your mind right now that you just got to get out of your system?
I am very, very intrigued by Colin Oliver.
Ooh, okay.
I think it's kind of fun. And I think it's because of how Jeff Hafley used Edgerrin Cooper last year, where he was kind of just an edge rusher standing up off ball. I think Colin Oliver can kind of do the same thing, but he actually has those off ball chops. He played a little off ball in 2023, but again, it's just about bringing them a different caliber of pass rush. I mean, all the Packers edge rushers are very like speed to power. They're going to try and run through you and try and be explosive that way, but they don't have any juice off the edge. Yeah. I think Colin Oliver is going to bring them a lot of juice. I really do wonder how they deploy him, because you're not just going to play him as your traditional like hand in the dirt, like edge right. defender. So you're going to have to kind of scheme him up to get like a head start or like let him stand up. But I'm actually really intrigued by the promise of that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a guy who is, I'm trying to think of a good comp of a guy who's like explosive, but kind of DPR-ish. Yeah, it'll come to me after we get off air, I'm sure of it, but always does. But yeah, I think that's a really comprehensive review there. JP, thank you for hopping on and filling in as Dalton gets his power situation sorted out overseas. It honestly saved me a midnight recording as well. Don't tell Dalton, but because our time zone difference is 5 hours. So, but yeah, this was a lot of fun. Again, your second time on the show.
Yeah, you know, this is a great time. I love talking ball with you. Thank you for having me on. We definitely got to do this more often. Not hoping that Dalton has his power go out. But hey, I'd love to be on.
I love it. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Another solid 30 minutes of action right there. But until next time, this has been another episode of the Dapped on Draft Podcast. Bye-bye.